This show is not intended for the politically correct or the close-minded. Enter at the risk of opening your eyes. You have been warned.
Why does the media attack an issue? To get primetime ratings?
In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in.
The Army Air Force has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
A moment comes when we step out from the old to the new, and when the soul of a nation, long suppressed, finds utterance.
Kind of catapult the propaganda.
You are listening to Open Eyes with your host, Ira Robinson. From the normal to the paranormal, from government cover-ups to the depths of our consciousness, we aim to explore all things. From the dawn of prehistory to current events, no topic is forbidden and nothing remains hidden.
No more secrets.
Open your eyes and open your mind to the fact that life as we know it is not as we have been taught. Join us at latenightinthemidlands.com or openeyesnetwork.com as we take this brief journey through the depths of the cosmos and explore what it really means to be human.
Many peoples have sacrificed their liberties only to learn to their sorrow that deceit and mockery, poverty and tyranny are their reward.
Whether you're online or offline, intercontinental or intergalactic, hello, and welcome to Open Eyes. So guys, I have a pretty big show on for you guys tonight. Tonight is going to be a little bit different than what I've been doing lately, which is covering topics that are more consciousness oriented and that sort of thing, a little bit more of the political style of things. And I'm going to get kind of back to my roots a little bit here, where I'm going to talk about the more woo-woo or esoteric side of things, I guess you could say. I'm going to present some information about Bigfoot. And, well, I prefer to call him Sasquatch, but Bigfoot, however you want to say it, reptilians, reptoids, saurians, whatever you want to call them as well. I have some things that I'll talk about regarding both of those, as well as some other subjects as well. Today is Wednesday, February 18th, and man, this month has really been flying by. It seems like just a couple of days ago, I had my birthday on the 4th, and boy, looking back, it's like, whoa, man, this is flying. I don't know. Time seems to fly sometimes for me. Maybe it's just because I'm getting older. Who knows? Anyway, so today is Wednesday. I have some news that I ran across for you guys before I get into the main topics tonight. Before I get started on those, though, I want to say, for those of you who know that my daughter Crystal has had some issues health-wise. Last week we had to take her to have a 24-hour test done at the hospital. Things went well with the test. We won't get the results back for a little while yet, but things did go well with the test, and she is okay. Everything's fine. For those of you who aren't aware, she's been having some issues as far as seizures are concerned, and so we've been trying to get figured out for a few months now exactly what's been going on with her neurologically or whatever it may be. And of course it's a big concern, because whenever you deal with a seizure disorder, it's something that you really have to pay attention to really hard. And so it's been a little rough on all of us, but she's doing well. She tolerated the tests well, so we're grateful for that. As soon as we know any more information, I'll definitely let you guys know. I know that there are a lot of my listeners out there that have been asking me about it and are concerned, and we really appreciate your prayers and the the good thoughts and the love that you guys have been sending our way. It's definitely appreciated. So thank you very much. I just wanted to give you an update on that on the air so that you guys could be aware. So for the news, well, I have a few bits for you that have been going on over the past couple of days that have definitely, I don't know, it makes me shake my head. It really does. According to LifeSite News, a Catholic publication, the Kenya Catholic Doctors Association is charging UNICEF and the WHO with sterilizing millions of girls and women under cover of an anti-tetanus vaccination program sponsored by the Kenyan government. The Kenyan government denies that there is anything wrong with the vaccine and says that it's perfectly safe. Of course it's perfectly safe. It's the vaccine. It's always going to be safe. The Kenya Catholic Doctors Association, however, saw evidence to the contrary and had 6 different samples of the tetanus vaccine from various locations around Kenya sent to an independent laboratory in South Africa for testing. The results confirmed their worst fears. All 6 samples tested positive for the HCS antigen. The HCG antigen. The HCG antigen is used in anti-fertility vaccines, but it was found present in tetanus vaccines targeted to young girls and women of childbearing age. So what we have here is the same type of thing that has been going on with vaccines as well as medications in general for a really long time. In the 1960s, it was found that over 9 million doses of the polio vaccine was contaminated, whether intentionally or not. It was never verified, but you gotta wonder, right? But 9 million doses of the polio vaccine was contaminated with the simian virus 40, which is a known virus. It's a virus that is known to cause cancer conditions. It's a direct cause of different types of cancer. So that was 9 million doses, at least. This was what was admitted, was 9 million doses. This was admitted by the CDC, and it was actually on their website, listed on their website for a very long period of time. It was only recently removed. So you have this that went on. There have been others as well that have occurred just here in America. You have the issue with Bayer sending medications that were contaminated with HIV overseas to be sold because they were found to be contaminated with it here and could not be sold. So they were sold overseas instead of discarding them or destroying them. This kind of stuff goes on. This kind of stuff goes on all of the time. I talked about before how the different Native American populations in the United States and in Canada have been over the years systematically destroyed by forced sterilization, not necessarily through the vaccines as is this case. But still, a forced sterilization has occurred. So, why is all of this stuff going on? Well, I think you would think it would be obvious, right? It's population control. It's without a doubt 100% population control. They have no qualms about doing this kind of stuff. This is a form of eugenics. They've been doing it for a very long time, and they're going to keep on doing it as long as they can get away with it. And that's the issue. We need to stop these people from doing this stuff. You know, one of the best ways to stop them from doing this kind of stuff is to stop supporting them. Stop buying the medications from the companies that you know that have been found guilty of doing this kind of stuff. Don't give them your financial support. If nothing else, if you're not going to go out and outcry on the streets, you can at the very least do something like that. That's my opinion. I hope that people will do something along those lines. I mean, something has to be done. the U.S. State Department is going to tweet ISIS to death. I kid you not, that's the name of this article. The United States State Department is going to tweet ISIS to death. The New York Times posted a story on the 16th saying that the administration is going to is going into counter messaging to defeat ISIS propaganda. The Center for Strategic Counterterrorism Communications is going to use more than 350 State Department Twitter accounts, combining embassies, consulates, media hubs, bureaus, and individuals, as well as similar accounts operated by the Pentagon, the Homeland Security Department, and foreign allies to launch a Twitter attack on ISIS. We're going to tweet them to death. ISIS sends 90,000 tweets a day, so the government is facing an awesome challenge. The administration is going to work out details of the campaign during the Obama summit on terrorism this week. So, we're going to tweet them to death. Now, just imagine this. This is the war of the words. The war of the words. So instead of war of the worlds, it's war of the words. This is a state of ridiculousness that goes far beyond anything that I have really ever heard. I mean, talk about serious propaganda, right? This is exactly how propaganda works. I mean, ISIS, of course, has been doing it. As they said there, 90,000 tweets a day is sent out by the different ISIS organizations. But so we're going to counterattack by sending just as many, if not more, tweets out. Oh boy, I don't know. I've said many times that the new state of warfare actually is the war on the internet, the war on computer systems, that it's not really going to be fought with bombs and bullets, although that is part of it, yes. But the main drive is going to be in regards to the internet. And this falls right into my thoughts as far as that's concerned. Going to tweet ISIS to death. I can't get over that headline. Now, in related news, related to this one, on MSNBC just a couple of days ago, a spokeswoman from the State Department named Marie Harf said that we cannot win this war by killing them. We cannot kill our way out of this war. I actually have the audio clip from this show that took place. I think it was on Chris Matthews' show there on MSNBC on Monday night. And I have the audio clip. You have to listen to the things that this woman has to say, and I'll comment on it after you get done listening to it. Here you go.
And nothing we do right now seems to be directed at stopping this.
Well, I think there's a few stages here. Right now, what we're doing is trying to take their leaders and their fighters off the battlefield in Iraq and in Syria. That's really where they flourish.
Are we killing enough of them?
We're killing a lot of them, and we're going to keep killing more of them. So are the Egyptians, so are the Jordanians. They're in this fight with us. But we cannot win this war by killing them. We cannot kill our way out of this war. We need, in the longer term, medium and longer term, to go after the root causes that leads people to join these groups, whether it's lack of opportunity for jobs.
Well, we're not going to be able to stop that in our lifetime. Or 50 lifetimes. There's always going to be poor people. There's always going to be poor Muslims. And as long as there are poor Muslims, the trumpet's blowing. They'll join. We can't stop that, can we?
We can work with countries around the world to help improve their governance. We can help them build their economy so they can have job opportunities for these people. You're right. There is no easy solution in the long term to preventing and combating violent extremism. But if we can help countries work at the root causes of this, what makes these 17-year-old kids pick up an AK-47 instead of try to start a business? Maybe we can try and try to chip away at this problem while at the same time going after the threat, taking on ISIL in Iraq, in Syria, and helping our partners around the world.
What are we doing to stop this? It sounds like we can't stop it.
Well, I think they should know that the United States military is taking direct action in Iraq and in Syria. We're taking their leaders out. We're taking out their financing. We're taking out their training camps. This is a long fight, Chris, but I also think, not to take it to politics for a second, they should tell their elected leaders to support the AUMF that we sent to Congress to speak to the world that we are behind.
I'm with you on that.
So I have to shake my head at the different things that, this government is trying to do to fight against this alleged enemy that we have going on. I mean, we know that ISIS is directly derived from the Israeli Secret Intelligence Service. We know this. This has been proven. It's been shown. It's just like with Al-Qaeda being part of the, or, you know, formed or derived from the CIA here in America. It's their form of it. We know this. The thing that makes me shake my head is that they're on one hand trying to beat the drums of war, saying that we are needing to go and attack them. We need to take them out from their base, their cancer that needs to be removed, and so on and so forth. And I don't necessarily disagree. But at the same token, saying, well, we need to do what we can do to help them find jobs. How many Americans are currently jobless? What do we have right now? It's been shown to be 11.5% unemployment rate here in the United States. And we're worried about giving jobs to people in the Middle East. It really makes me shake my head. It's obvious that they don't care about the American people. It's obvious that they don't care about us, the great unwashed masses. They couldn't give two craps about us. They took our jobs. I'm really seriously wondering when we started doing politics and running the United States on the basis of South Park, because this is what it's like. It really does make me shake my head in wonder at all of this stuff that's going on. How are people not seeing through this? Didn't we do the same kind of crap in Iraq? Didn't they call for the drums of war to be beaten before going over into Iraq? And then we gave them democracy, and then we had to rebuild their infrastructure because we destroyed all of their jobs. I mean, it's the same thing, right? This is perpetual. This is the war machine doing everything that it can to earn as much money as it can, to suck the resources dry out of the American people as it can, while they can. It's as simple as that, guys, really. It boggles me how people are not seeing through this stuff. It boggles my mind how people are actually still falling for this stuff. But I guess it can at least partially be explained by the fluoride in the water, because it does dumb people down. It can be at least partially explained by the stupidity virus that people have, because that does dumb people down. It can be explained by the aluminum that's being sprayed on us by the chemtrails, because aluminum is a neurotoxin and does dumb people down. I know all of this. This is right there in my mind. I know it, but it just still amazes me how deep people go into their psyches to avoid thinking about the more difficult things that are going on, to avoid seeing the difficult things that are going on. It's really a sad state of affairs, but I don't know. People will still be eating their Twinkies. I mean, people freaked out when Hostess decided to close down. People freaked out and they went off and they did massive letter writing campaigns and protested and all that kind of stuff. Bring us our Twinkies back. Bring us our ho-hos back. Bring us our ding-dongs back. So now that they have, okay, well, people are now going out and they're buying them like crazy again. They're getting their GMO foods again, you know. It just... And then they don't ask questions about, okay, well, why is it that we are tweeting people to death as a means for war? Why is it that they're spending $479 million on planes that don't fly? Why is it that they're forcing vaccinations on us when they've been proven to be doing damage to us? And they'll clamor for that stuff. You know, they'll clamor for the lies. Tell us more lies, please, because we can't face the truth. Tell us more lies, please, because you've entrained our brains to never see the truth about stuff. They start it when we're in school and they just continue it on from there. So speaking of vaccines, this is an article that I ran across that I was actually kind of surprised they actually put out. This kind of tells actually the other side of the story, and it's the side of the story that I've been trying to say for a while now. I wanted to bring this to your attention, though, because with the whole measles crap and the people that are screaming and hollering about the anti-vaxxers, even though it's been proven that the measles outbreak was done from somebody from a foreign country as well as being someone that was vaccinated. Nobody's talking about that, but they'll sure as hell talk about all the anti-vacciners out there and how they need to be put in jail for refusing to vaccinate their children. Anyways, so this article that I ran across, it actually shows kind of the opposite side of things, and it actually delves a little bit into the truth of stuff, and I was surprised to see it on Yahoo, of all things. When Susan Lawson of Colorado hears parents declaring unequivocally that everyone should vaccinate their children because it's perfectly safe, she says that it feels like a punch in the gut. That's because she's seen another side of the story. Her daughter Julia, now 9 years old, was left with permanent brain damage, an injury acknowledged by a federal court payout, after receiving her MMR shot when she was a year old. One morning about a week after Julia received the shot, her now ex-husband found her daughter in a terrifying state. She was blue and cold, and her body was arched, her eyes were looking in opposite directions, and she was covered in feces and vomit. We thought that she was dead. She was rushed to the hospital, where doctors said that she was having seizures, and she was put into a medically induced coma. Julia spent many days in intensive care and the neurology ward before being sent home with the diagnosis of encephalitis, or swelling of the brain. Lawson, a veterinarian who had the utmost faith in medicine, had never before questioned vaccinations and had always inoculated Julia right on schedule. But now she began to wonder. Hospital doctors dismissed any thought of a connection. They always do. But when Lawson asked a pediatrician about it, she was told that it could be a possibility. She is not the only family that has received a payment by the United States Court of Federal Claims, which concluded that their rare injuries were caused by the vaccines. Another quote from Lawson, "I felt shocked, bewildered, and guilty. We were trying to protect her, and instead I destroyed her. The guilt is huge." Now, if you're a longtime listener of my show, you know that I understand exactly where she is coming from with her statements there. My son, who is 13 years old at this point, is autistic, severely autistic. Specifically, the form of autism that he has is called childhood disintegrative disorder. And the autism was directly caused by the MMR vaccine that he was given. I know this. I have been told this actually by doctors. I have the proof for myself that it was injury that was done by a vaccine, and no one can tell me otherwise. So I know exactly what she's going through with the guilt that she feels over the idea that doing something to, at least what we thought was to protect our child from something of a horrible disease, was the right thing to do. That guilt there is there. It's there in me. I feel it all the time. Whenever I look at him, I feel that deep sadness and regret over not doing the research for myself at that time and finding out the truth about the vaccines and what can go on with them. It really is a saddening state of events. Now, as I alluded to there in that article, or as it was alluded to there in that article, she is not the only one that has been found to be right in her assertions that the vaccines did cause the brain damage in her child. There are other court cases that have happened with the so-called vaccine court here in the United States that has found that vaccines did cause autism, especially in relation to the MMR vaccines. They have been shown, the families have been paid by the court in relation to this injury. And yet people will then still continue to scream and holler that vaccines don't cause autism. Bull. If they did not cause autism, then why does the court say that the vaccine caused autism? You see, nobody really understands and nobody really knows the truth with it all. They are aggressively ignorant when it comes to this stuff. They are aggressively ignorant cowards when it comes to the idea that, oh, vaccines are not safe. Or, oh, we have to bow down before the medical community because vaccines are the end all and be all of protecting our children. Instead of doing what we need to do to improve their natural defenses, for instance. The Supreme Court ruled that a federal law prohibits lawsuits against drug makers over serious side effects from childhood vaccines. This is from another article that I found that was from a few years ago. And I wanted to be sure to bring this up to you guys so that you guys could understand how this stuff is going, how this stuff is working out. The court voted 6-2 against the parents of a child who sued the drug maker Wyeth in Pennsylvania State Court for the health problems that they say their daughter, now 19, suffered from a vaccine that she received in infancy. The ruling was a stinging defeat for families dissatisfied with how they had fared before a special no-fault vaccine court. Justice Antonin Scalia, writing for the court, said Congress set up a special vaccine court in 1986 to handle such claims as a way to provide compensation to injured children without driving drug manufacturers from the vaccine market. The idea, he said, was to create a system that spares the drug companies the costs of defending against parents' lawsuits. Justices Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sonia Sotomayor dissented. Nothing in the 1986 law remotely suggests that Congress intended such a result, Sotomayor wrote, taking issue with Scalia's statements. Scalia confirmed the outcome and said that when a vaccine is properly prepared and is accompanied by proper directions and warnings, lawsuits over its side effects are not allowed under the 1986 law. Vaccine manufacturers fund from their sales an informal, efficient compensation program for vaccine injuries, Scalia said. In exchange, they avoid costly tort litigation and the occasional disproportionate jury verdict. So you see how it goes here, people. They have set up a special court specifically for trying vaccine-related cases. That is it, and that is all. That is all that they do. It's the so-called vaccine court. It is very, very difficult, to say the least, to get a assent from this court in acknowledging that your child was damaged by a vaccine. It is exceedingly difficult, and it takes many years in a lot of cases to have it done. But they have come out and said that, yes, the vaccines were directly responsible for causing autism. Yes, the vaccines were directly related to causing paralysis. Yes, they blah, 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 blah. They have acknowledged it, they have admitted it, and they have paid off the parents of these children that were damaged and injured by these different vaccines a lot of money. Yes, a lot of money to help compensate for the damages that are done, but still, they have come out and said, yes, these have happened, these have occurred. So how can people then turn around and claim that the vaccines don't cause damage, that the vaccines are perfectly safe and harmless, even though on the warning labels of the vaccines, it will list horrific side effects all the way through? Oh, but they're perfectly safe. The things happen rarely. And yet now autism is 1 in 50 as of the year 2013. The result, the numbers from the CDC as of 2013 now state that autism is 1 in 50. In 1940, two vaccines were given. In 1980, you know, the 70s and 80s, 8 vaccines were given. Now they're given 49 by the time that they're 6 years old. And that's a real sad thing. That's a real, people need to get cautious with this. There is a lot of stuff that's in those vaccines that does cause damage. And it has been proven to cause damage. They warn you about it, that it causes damage. And yet they've set up this vaccine court so that they themselves don't have to take any kind of responsibility for the crap that they do to our kids. They don't have to take responsibility. They don't have to look into our faces and their faces and look at them and say, yes, we know that we caused the problem. They get to completely avoid any kind of consciousness or conscience when it comes to what they do to our kids. And yes, I understand the science behind it. Yes, I understand what people are trying to claim about the way that vaccines work and how they make it more effective to be safe from these different viruses and blah, blah, blah. I understand the science behind it. But I also advocate for the fact that, look, a lot more needs to be done to make these damn things a lot safer than what they are right now. There's no reason for them to have all of this stuff in it that causes so much damage and so many adverse effects. There's no reason for it. We have breakthroughs in science that allow us to do a lot of different things, and yet we're using these techniques and things that were designed in the 17 and 1800s. Okay? Why? Have we not progressed any further than that? Come on. Give me a break. Okay, I'm sorry I went off on that for a while. I know I monologued on that for a long time, but you guys know me by now. You know that that's a passion point for me, and I really wanted to get that information out as far as the vaccine court thing is concerned. Let me just put it to you this way, as far as the vaccine court thing is concerned, when the government has to make it illegal to sue the companies that are responsible for these things, you know that there is a problem. When they make it illegal for parents to be able to sue these manufacturers for the damage they cause, you know that there is something wrong. So the last story that I have for you is a kind of a quick one. You guys know that I've also been paying some attention to the illegal immigration issue that's been going on and how the well, Obama has come forward and said, okay, well, all of these people are here. They're going to kind of basically get amnesty and all that kind of crap. Well, a federal court late Monday blocked an executive order by President Barack Obama that would have granted relief from deportation to millions of unauthorized immigrants. Governor Greg Abbott sued the federal government on December 3rd while he was the state attorney general, leading what would become a 26-state coalition opposed to Obama's order. The ruling by Brownsville federal judge Andrew S. Hannon prevents all applicable agencies from implementing any expansions to the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. Hours after the ruling, White House Press Secretary Josh Earnest issued a statement saying that the Justice Department would appeal Hannon's decision. And this is a quote from him. The Supreme Court and Congress have made clear that the federal government can set priorities in enforcing our immigration laws, which is exactly what the president did when he announced common sense policies to help fix our broken immigration system. Those policies are consistent with the laws passed by Congress and decisions of the Supreme Court, as well as 5 decades of precedent by presidents of both parties who have used their authority to set priorities in enforcing our immigration laws. The Department of Justice, legal scholars, immigration experts, and the District Court in Washington, D.C. have determined that the president's actions are well within his legal authority. Top law enforcement officials, along with state and local leaders across the country, have said that these policies will also benefit economy and help keep communities safe. The district court's decision wrongly prevents these lawful, common sense policies from taking effect, and the Department of Justice has indicated that it will appeal that decision. So I wanted to be sure to make mention of this in this episode, because this guy coming out here and saying that this is to keep communities safe. Well, right there, you should know that there is an issue, right? You should know that if they're having to come forward and say, well, these are here to keep communities safe, why would they not be safe if you deported out the people that are here illegally? If they're here against the law and they are criminals, then how is that? How is keeping them here keeping communities safe? I don't get that. I don't get your logic there, Mr. Ernst. I really don't understand how deporting illegals is something dangerous. I just don't get it. I don't see it. It's a little confusing on your logic there, buddy boy. Anyways, okay, so guys, I'm going to take a break here real quick. I need to get a drink down my throat here. And no, I don't mean alcohol, although with what I've been talking about so far, maybe I could use a good stiff drink. Anyways, I'm going to take a break here real quick. And when we come back, I'm going to get into the topic of Bigfoot, Sasquatch, skunk ape, whatever it is that you want to call him. We're going to talk about the big guy here and maybe get into some things that you've never heard about with it before. Hopefully, we'll see. So hang around with us. We'll be back in just a few minutes. The new priests are the purveyors of the now. If you don't get this right now, you are doomed mindset that is surrounding us was created by these men in black, these dark masters, these puppet masters that control the strings. They, the ones with the real knowledge of how reality works, those that know and understand the origins of us. Those are the ones controlling the masses through the media, through the politics, through everything that causes us to be divided, losing the sense of what is really real. That reality is that we are all connected, all together in this thought experiment that the universe is running. We are intimately connected together, forever traveling through the universe at light speed. We're all breathing the same air. The same energies pass through us. The same emotions that you feel are the same emotions that I feel. We are all one. Stop being divided by them. Stop letting the priests of chaos and blight rule you. Stop believing the lies.
Let me assure you that our priority will remain to ensure stability and security.
In order to ensure the security and continued continuing stability, security
for Canadians.
Galactic Empire!
So this is how liberty dies. With thunderous applause.
Have you been looking for answers? Have you been seeking the truth but can't seem to find it? Late Night in the Midlands has the answers for you. Whether you are interested in the paranormal, aliens and UFOs, alternative health information, or just a little hope and inspiration, we have a show for you. Late Night in the Midlands, Open Eyes, The Red Pill Reality Show, The Secret Teachings, Paranormal Perceptions, and The Turning of the Wheel. All here on the L&M Network for you to listen to at any time that you want. Everything is free to listen to, and though it is not required, we are listener supported, and all donations are deeply appreciated. You will not find shows like these in the mainstream media. Go to latenightinthemidlands.com to listen. The L&M Network, where the truth has no fear.
So I want to challenge you all about what you think you know. You think that you're a human being and you know the way the world works, but I'm here to burst that bubble.
All of us are energy. A human being is a very complex pattern of energy.
The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward, how much you can take and keep moving forward.
Much more important to teach children to question what they read. Children should be taught to question everything. Children should be taught to question authority. Parents never teach their children to question authority because parents are authority figures themselves.
Like it or not, for the moment, the earth is where we make our stand.
It's just a ride. We can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love.
Because to be awoken means you're doing the work here to change this world right here in the now, where you're at now, from where you're at now.
The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one.
It underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another and to preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known.
But I'm exactly where I wanted to be, because I realized I gotta commit my very being to this thing. I gotta breathe it, I gotta eat it, I gotta sleep it. And until you get there, you'll never be successful in life. But once you get there, I guarantee you, the world is yours. The world is yours.
Welcome back to Open Eyes. My name is Ira, and you know, I like playing that audio because there is a lot that's in it that really does speak about the way that people can change their mindset and make a real difference in the world. It really can happen, but it takes a person coming to a state of mind where they are, not holding on to all of the resentments and everything from their past. They have to come into a state of a forgiving mindset towards everything that has occurred in their lives. And that is something that I believe firmly in. I've done it in my own life. I've seen other people do it in their lives. It is possible to do. And I like to remind people that when it all comes down to it, love is the most important thing. But we also have to understand where other people are coming from. And that really is an aspect of love as well. So tonight I wanted to talk to you guys about Bigfoot, among other things. And again, I tend to prefer to call him Sasquatch, but you'll probably hear me use the term Bigfoot because that's what a lot of people associate with it and that sort of thing. But I also want to talk about some other things that are very related to the Bigfoot enigma. And, well, I'll start off by saying things like with this. Bigfoot really is big business. There's a lot of money to be made in the whole Bigfoot phenomenon. And there are some people out there that will take full advantage of that. That's because a lot of people will, well, a lot of people go out and they search for information about Bigfoot. They're interested in the topic. They're curious about it. They'll go try to research the topic on the internet, do a little bit of internet librarying, and they'll research it either on their own or maybe through the internet or through reading books that are written and that sort of thing. And there are those that are out there that also put on like Bigfoot hunts and charge people for going on them. And a lot of the things that are out there that are designed to attract people to the information that's out there about Bigfoot, a lot of it is a lot of bunk. A lot of it is just there to get views or to get people to buy this book or whatever it may be. The people that write them may not even have a clue about Bigfoot or any interest in the topic, but because it's a popular topic, they will talk about it. They will write about it. They'll create a whole website about it in the hopes that people will come. And while they're there, maybe clicking on an advertisement or something like that. There's a lot of that out there. If you just search the term Bigfoot, you come up with, gosh, what is it, like 105 million different results on a Google search, for instance. And it's insane how many websites that are out there that are dedicated to the idea or the topic of strictly Bigfoot. It really is big business, guys. So because of that, there are those out there that will take full advantage of it. There are a lot of people that are out there that are hoaxing. I'll get into all of that in a little while, but I just wanted to make sure to toss that out early because it is a thing and no one can really deny that. So, Sasquatch. Well, there's been a lot of legends about Sasquatch, probably for as long as we've had human history. And that alone should tell us that there is something to this phenomenon. I found a story that actually came from Pennsylvania as an example of a Sasquatch encounter. And I thought it was really interesting because it really does describe a lot of the characteristics and everything that goes on with the Sasquatch. So while the observation only lasted about 15 to 20 seconds, a witness saw the creature cross the road and enter into a nearby wooded area. The witness, a woman, estimated that the creature stood about 6 to 7 feet tall and weighed approximately 300 to 400 pounds. The witness stated that she slammed on her brakes as soon as she saw the creature, but it could no longer be seen. The lady was so upset after the observation that she pulled off the road. She later continued on to work, but didn't tell anyone about what she had seen. She said that she was disturbed all day as a result of her experience, but waited until she got home to tell her daughter about what she had observed. The witness and her daughter discussed the possibility of reporting the encounter, but they didn't want to call the police. And then it goes into the person who was writing this story talks about how they eventually got into contact with the witness and that they did an interview with her. He said, we also accompanied the woman to the scene of the sighting so that we could get a better understanding of what had occurred. There was also another Bigfoot witness who was familiar with this story to accompany us. During the interview, more information about the incident came forward. The woman indicated that she was driving slowly along Route 30 at approximately 20 to 25 miles per hour. When the witness noticed the creature, it was about 300 feet away. It was standing sideways in a hunched position on the back road, looking west towards the woods ahead. As the witness watched, the creature turned its head and looked towards the highway, then took another two or three long strides and stepped into the thick of woods where it was lost from sight. The woman stated that the creature was man-like and covered with long black hair. While no facial features could be determined, the head seemed somewhat oval in shape, and there was very little neck apparent. There was hair hanging down from the chin, and the hair appeared thinner on the arms. The arms hung down at the sides of the creature, and they appeared long and extended down almost to the knees. The chest area appeared larger than the area around the abdomen, and the physical detail which stood out to the witness the most was that the legs appeared extremely long in comparison to the rest of the body. The legs were thin and covered with hair. After the interview, we went to the location of the sighting. One of the observers made a good subject for the witness to compare with in regard to the size of the creature. This gentleman stood 6 foot 2 tall and weighed about 300 pounds. The witness stayed near the top of the hill towards the highway, while this man went down the road to stand at the approximate spot where the creature reportedly stood. The witness was amazed when she realized that the man looked small in comparison to the creature. She now estimated that the creature would have been around 8 feet tall. The witness said that she was reluctant to tell others about her sighting, and the lady had never believed such accounts before until she had had her own encounter. So I thought I would open with that because, again, this account, which let me see, I found that on rents.com. I'll have the link for it in the show notes for this show. It was an interesting account that I thought. Anyways, the witness account there, it's very similar to a lot of other witness accounts that are out there that try to talk about the way that Bigfoot looks, and she gave a very good approximation of exactly what Bigfoot looks like, acts like, and that sort of thing. So again, I wanted to bring that as a starting basis so that you guys could get a pretty good understanding of maybe what Bigfoot really is. So I wanted to also go into a legend about Bigfoot that is from my own people. Now, as many of you may or may not know, I am Native American and specifically of the Miami tribe descent. And I was told a legend by an elder of mine years ago that has stuck with me, referring to Sasquatch or the skunk ape or Bigfoot or whatever it is that you want to call him. So here's basically what I was told with it. A very long time ago, our people had interactions with the big ones. That was his words for it, the big ones. They lived separate from us, and they were shy about interacting with humans, but there was definitely trade that went on between the tribes and them. things were like that for a really long time, with them and us sort of coexisting together, not directly living together in unity or in the same villages or tribal areas or anything along those lines, but at least coexisting together. There really wasn't much animosity between the two peoples. But then a war broke out between the people and the big ones. The reason why this war happened has been forgotten with time. But in the end, a new peace was reached, and it was agreed that to do this type of thing again would be foolish because a lot was lost on both sides. They became more nomadic, backing away from humans and going into the places that we rarely went, and it was agreed that things would be fine with things that way. And it's been that way ever since. The main idea with it is that they had at least some form of sentience because they were able to interact at least in some ways with our people. And this type of thing went on for a very long period of time. I thought that was an interesting story, though, an interesting take on it, because I've heard a lot of different legends about Sasquatch over the years in all of the research that I've done, and I don't really hear many people referring to the idea that at one point in time there was actually a diverse trade type of events going on between the two communities, and that the two communities were sort of coexisting together in that way for a long time. I thought it was a very interesting idea, I guess you could say. And now, of course, I don't know as far as the verisimilitude of the story. I can't validate that because it's obviously it's a legend that's been passed down with my ancestors, but still it's an interesting take on things, and I can't really discount that kind of possibility with it. Ralph Gray Wolf, in an interview with a reporter from a Minnesota newspaper in 1988, said, "In our way of beliefs, they make appearances at troubled times to help troubled Indian communities get more in tune with Mother Earth. Sasquatch brings signs or messages that there is a need to change or a need to cleanse." He was a visiting Athapascan Indian from Alaska. So it's interesting because they're not the only one, or he's not the only one to have claimed this kind of thing either, that the idea of Sasquatch is that they are some sort of almost kind of a divine being or a watcher of sorts. That's one thing that I've kind of maybe thought over the years in different interactions that I've had with people. It with the idea that Sasquatch is actually maybe sort of an interdimensional being of a kind. I really would not be shocked by that. And I'm not saying for sure 100% that that's what it is. I kind of more lean towards the idea that it is some sort of an offshoot of the great apes, you know. I'll get into that here in a little while. But the idea that Bigfoot is some sort of interdimensional being is like, well, one thing that I've heard from different tribal elders over the years that I've interacted with is that essentially they are able to cross between dimensions, that they are separate from us in a different dimension, but frequency, like they are just slightly offset from our own state of being or existence, and that they are able to sidestep in between the two dimensions. And when I'm saying dimensions, I'm sort of meaning that this one, theirs is overlapped on top of ours. It's essentially the same, but it's just slightly askew from what we see, and that they are able basically to shift between the two realms for whatever reason, whether that was through kind of divine thing or technology thing or whatever it may be, I don't know, but that's the idea behind it. And that essentially they are the idea of the watchers that were talked about in the Book of Enoch, that these beings are actually the watchers that were there, and they've been having interactions or watching over us throughout our existence, essentially. And again, whether that's a definite or not, I don't know. I mean, this is just a legend that I've come across and learned from different peoples of my tribes. But it's a good possibility, and I don't discount it. It would be really cool if that was exactly how it is. But that actually is one of the main reasons why they're so elusive, is because when they're seen or whatever, they can slip back and forth and sideways in between, basically. So that's why they tend to be not very easily caught or seen. So it's interesting. I ran across another thing here. It says, Ray Owen, son of a Dakota spiritual leader from Prairie Island Reservation in Minnesota, told a reporter from the Red Wing Minnesota Republican Eagle, "They exist in another dimension from us, but can appear in this dimension whenever they have a reason to. It's like they are, there are many levels or many dimensions. When our time in this one is finished, we move on to the next, but the big man can go between. The big man comes from God. He's our big brother, kind of looks out for us." And like I said, I've heard that exact same thing from many different people that would be considered to be spiritual leaders in the Native tribes. Now, is this the truth of things? Again, I don't discount that possibility. I lean more towards maybe more of a more, I don't know, quote unquote, normal viewpoint of things, as opposed to an interdimensional viewpoint of things. But I don't discount the possibility. So that is really the case, though, that when it comes to the idea of Sasquatch, Sasquatch is sort of a given when it comes to the idea of him in the legends and in the information of my people. It really is just sort of a given, you know, sure, it exists. Why wouldn't it? Of course he exists. He's always been existent. they seem to know when humans are around. They seem to know when humans are looking for them. They will, I don't know, maybe kind of, I guess you could say, glean whether or not a person that is approaching them or is looking for them, whether or not they are someone that would be worthy of interacting with. It's sort of like they know, they get it on a telepathic level or something like that. They're very sensitive, I guess you could say, and that they will avoid anybody that would be considered to be dangerous to them. That's one thing that I've heard a lot of people say in the tribes that I've interacted with. And I think I give a lot of credence to that. I mean, if you think about it, actually a lot of animals are that way as well. you know, how many times have people said, oh, well, animals know when a tornado is coming or when an earthquake's coming or anything along those lines. It's like there's an instinct that's there almost at a psychic level to say, yes, this type of thing is going on. Don't be around this area. Move away from here because, well, somebody dangerous is around or something major is coming. You know, it's sort of normal, you know, in the way that they do things. And I think Bigfoot acts the same way because it's like he's more of a, well, he's kind of a cross, that cross between being a quote unquote full human or true human and the animal. It's a hybrid between the two, I guess you could say. And for my people, and I know almost every tribe out there as well feels the same way, the animals, plants, everything, it's all one. It's all, well, not one, but it's a family. We're all connected together. We're all interacting together in this big family of the universe, the entire creation. We're all cousins, basically. And so he is seen as sort of a close relative. So you have your cousins, but he'd be more of a brother, I guess you could say. There are a lot of people that say that there is no physical evidence of Bigfoot, that there has never been found anything to say, yes, this is physical evidence that Bigfoot exists and we can rely on this and that sort of thing. I hear that a lot. And the truth is that that is actually a false statement. There actually is more physical evidence than most people really want to acknowledge. The fact is that physical evidence in the form of, well, tracks that don't match any other kind of animal tracks, that don't match any kind of human tread. The strides are way too long. They're very deep. They're huge feet. The hairs that have not been able to be associated with any kind of other kind of wild animals. Big poops that don't get made by other known species. Again, these are all types of physical evidence. But the thing that most people try to say is that there's no bodies of Bigfoot that's been found, or at least none that are quote unquote legit. And one of the reasons for that is because people really haven't been looking for them. And I know that sounds kind of funny to say, but it really is the truth. You won't hear about deer remains found in the woods if no one is out there looking for deer remains, right? It's sort of the same idea. Seriously, though, one of the prevalent reasons is because as a species that is intelligent, it would be easy to realize that they likely have, like, burial ceremonies and maybe even full-grown funereal rites. They might actually take care of their dead, you know, bury their dead and go through maybe a ritualistic thing that, you know, they're interred in the ground, I guess you could say. I mean, it's not outside the bounds of possibilities, right? We see that in other species as well, besides humans and besides actually even the great apes. We see that kind of activity happen where a animal that dies is mourned and they are actually sort of enacting a funeral rite or a burial ceremony that goes on. Look at elephants. That's a great example right there. I mean, you can think about it this way. There are there are still many miles of America that have never been touched by a human being and never had a footprint on them. There are many miles that have never been seen by a human eye. So why would it not be possible for these things to exist in those areas? I mean, new species are being discovered every single year, and a lot of them were thought to have never been possible to exist, right? And many of them as well were discovered after many years of people claiming that they actually existed, and yet it was denied. It was said to never be a possibility. I mean, if you think about it this way, there's the idea that in areas where there are ape species, so for instance in Africa and so on and so forth, there hasn't been any kind of work that's done to look for the remains of any kind of those that are around, you know, where they're rumored to be. So when it comes to Sasquatch, for this species that is really elusive, it would be very possible to have a species that can avoid detection, that has learned how to avoid being spotted, that has learned how to avoid human beings. There are many miles of forested country here in this country alone, in the United States alone, let alone throughout the rest of the world. I mean, in this episode, I'm mainly focusing on the one here in America, you know, the idea of Sasquatch as opposed to the idea of Yeti and so on. But the fact is that, yes, we do have so much land that has never been touched, that has never been looked at. It's very possible that a species could hide really easily within this deeply forested land that we still have. And that's just here in the United States alone. You get up into Canada and it's even more heavily forested and even less touched. I mean, if you think about it this way, I ran across this and this is a real good way of putting it as far as the remains issue is concerned. There are very few remains of ancient wood apes that have been found in Asia, where they were much more abundant. Millions of gigantos, a branch of the wood ape line, lived and died in Asia over the ages. All of the remaining physical evidence that we have of them could fit into a few shoe boxes. Fossils of any land animals are very rare. Remains do not become fossilized very often, but unless it happens, all the remains will, in time, become completely reabsorbed into the ecosystem. There would be remains of animals everywhere if remains were not naturally recycled, including bones and teeth. And that's a real good point. I could not have put it better, that even in the areas where we know that things existed over time, we find no remains because they have just been completely eradicated through time. And the same thing could be said for the idea here with Sasquatch, that even though we have the idea that they've existed here all along, it's a very big possibility that no remains actually remain just because it's been eradicated with time. And this is a species that's been said to maybe only number in the 10,000 area, you know, as opposed to a black bear. How many people run across a black bear? It's very rare, right? It's not very, very common occurrence at all. And yet there are estimated to be almost a million black bears within the United States alone. So if you have that kind of a number and you have such a rare sighting of them, then why would a lesser populated species be any different, right? And that's just taking on the idea of it being these physical beings as opposed to the interdimensionals. And this is more of a normal looking approach to it. If you take the other side of things with it, it becomes that much more, you know, because these are beings that are of something else. It's an entirely different existence. So the term Sasquatch, in case you're curious, the term Sasquatch is a derivative of the word Sesquatch, meaning wild man. I thought that was really interesting. The origination of the word. I'm very interested in etymology as word origins. That's something that I've always been very curious about, and how different phrases and words come about. I don't mean to get off the track or anything like that, but I thought that was an interesting little take on it, in case you were ever curious as to why the word Sasquatch is there. The term Bigfoot was a term that was used in like the 1950s era by like newspapers and television to describe what was seen like in California area, the Washington area. And the word basically has just become the most commonly used word for this creature. So most of the Sasquatches are seen walking, and they have an interesting gait to them. A lot of people will liken it to being like cross-country skiing or riding a bicycle or something like that. Their arms swing really, really wide as they walk. They take very long strides as opposed to the human being, which, unless we're running, we tend to take actually very short strides compared to what our legs are capable of doing, unless we're in a hurry. But a slow walking pace, we do a very short step each time that we take a step. However, with the Bigfoot that has been seen, they tend to take these really long strides, no matter how fast or slow they're going. And it's a very different gait than what the human being normally has. And that's one way that researchers have been able to see the difference of whether or not it was actually a Bigfoot, or maybe somebody that was in a Bigfoot suit that was perpetuating a hoax or something. That's one way that they have, I guess, put forward as an idea that this is a different thing. They tend to walk with their legs bent all the time. And that's not something that human beings normally do, because if you do it for any length of time, it starts to hurt. We're not really built for that kind of walking. That's more for the running, and that's a different kind of stride that's done. They are able to make a lot of very distinct sounds, and I've actually heard, I think, a couple of them over the years. My family used to do a lot of backpacking and hiking and camping in areas that have been known for a long time here to be, or thought at least to be, prevalent with Bigfoot. And while we were camping one evening, there was a crazy experience. We were in the woods, and there was a lake that was very close by, and we were on one side of the lake, and there was a large sound that came from the opposite side of the lake, and it sounded like, it was like really, it wasn't like a wolf kind of a howl or a coyote or anything along those lines. It was very much, it sounded almost, almost kind of like a bonobo kind of a sound, you know. It was a very distinct sort of a hoot as opposed to a howl, basically. And from the area behind us, some distance away, we heard another one over there, like answering the call. And it was a pretty freaky experience because these things were loud. I mean, they were loud as hell. We were extremely freaked out by it. But then my dad and we, I was saying we by me and my cousins that were there, we were kids and we were freaked out. And then my dad said, no, that don't worry about it. That's just Squatch. He's calling out to his woman. So we kind of relaxed after that since dad claimed that he knew what it was, but you know, whether or not he knew it and was just saying that as the truth or whether he was just saying that to calm us down because we were kind of freaking out, I don't know. I never really asked him. He died before I had a chance to ask him, but it was still a really interesting experience. And looking back on it and hearing how people have talked about that Bigfoot will sound a lot like that, I'm pretty convinced that, yeah, I probably did hear Bigfoot calling out to his woman that night. So it's interesting. I mean, they do seem to travel in groups. They have a sort of a social, family structure with groups traveling together, which again, it goes into the legend that I talked about towards the beginning of all of this that came from my people of the Sasquatch having their own communities that we interacted with. And whether or not that's still the case or not, I don't know. There may be some spots on a mountain somewhere that, you know, there's this big, huge tribe of them that are living there and nobody really ever knew, you know? So, but they do seem to go together overall, I guess you could say. So, of course, with all of this, there is, as I mentioned, the opportunity for money and fame. And as such, there have been a number of hoaxes that have been put on by people through the years trying to claim their piece of the legend. One of the biggest of these is of course the Rick Dreyer situation. And I don't know if you know much about that one, but he not only hoaxed once, he hoaxed twice and people still believe him. He also, I mean, he basically claimed in an interview that he did with Michael Vera one night on Late Night in the Midlands that he's teaching other people how to do it too. But there have been many others through the years that have been known to have put out these hoaxes. So, of course, the fame train is a big part of the reason why people would do this, but there's more to it as well. There are a lot of people that are out there that will poo-poo on the idea or any idea or situation that they don't understand or believe in. They'll perpetuate hoaxes in order to make people think that it's real, and then they'll reveal that it was not in the intention or in order to muddy the waters of the real things that are going on. You see that happening, for example, with crop circles. That people will go out and they'll hoax these crop circles, and then they'll laugh about it in the media because they know, and some of them have come out and said that they don't understand what the crop circles are. And so they do this basically to get people to laugh at the idea of it because nobody understands. People are like that. People are weird like that. But again, just because there are hoaxers out there, that doesn't mean that things aren't really happening and that the Squatch isn't a real phenomena. You know, it doesn't mean that. Now, there is one theory that's out there that perhaps Sasquatch is a remnant of the Neanderthal line. There's growing evidence that the man and Neanderthal man clashed in a war of attrition, so to speak, a long time ago. You know, like 100,000 years ago, Neanderthals migrated to the Middle East and began going to war with humans there. And there's a lot of evidence that suggests that they may have even bred with humans. And in fact, it was just recently announced that Neanderthal DNA is mixed with Homo sapien DNA, and that actually anyone that is of pure African descent is free of the Neanderthal DNA. So it's a possibility that what we have come to call Bigfoot is actually a derivative of Neanderthals that migrated to hidden and secluded areas and maybe have adopted or adapted over time to become what we see today as Bigfoot. Another possibility, and one that I think actually is more likely, is that they're related to Gigantopithecus, which is one of our alleged ancestors. And think about it this way. A lot of things show Sasquatch as being a being that is very tall, usually over like 8 feet or more. And we do know that in our distant pasts, there were very large humanoids that interacted with people. We know these things through historical writings. So is it a possibility that Sasquatch is a descendant of them? And I think that the possibility is there. It definitely would go far to explaining a lot of different things. So guys, I am going to take a break here real quick. When we come back, I'm going to talk just a little bit more about Bigfoot, and then I'm actually going to get into the reptilians side of things. And I hope you guys stick around because I have a lot of really interesting info to tell you guys. So hold on. We'll be back in just a few minutes after these messages.
The L&M Radio Network and Late Night in the Midlands depends on you, the listener. Without you, there would be no us. So help us continue to bring you the best guests with the best information and subscribe today. Information on becoming an L&M subscriber can be found at the top of latenightinthemidlands.com. Just click the About Subscriptions tab and become part of the family while helping the truth stay alive. And while you're at it, maybe subscriptions aren't for you. A one-time donation helps as well. Click that donate button on the right side of latenightinthemidlands.com and help us help you.
Ben Franklin said, "If you do the same thing tomorrow as you did today, you're going to get the same tomorrow as you got today." Changing the world starts with you, and changing you starts with changing the way you think. Late Night in the Midlands can help. Listen to all of our shows at latenightinthemidlands.com because things really do need to change.
Robert Nozick developed something called The Tale of the Slave. It's very brief, goes through 9 quick stages. Nozick invites you to imagine yourself as the slave in the story. Stage 1 is that you are indeed a slave subject to a brutal master who forces you to work for him and who beats you arbitrarily. In the second stage, the master lightens up a bit and he beats you only for breaking the rules, and he even grants you some free time. In the third stage, we add the additional dimension that you are one of a group of slaves subject to this master, and this master, based on principles that are acceptable to all of you, decides how goods will be allocated among you. In the fourth stage, you even get some time off. You have to work for the master for only 3 days per week. The other 4 days are your own. In stage 5, you even get to work wherever you want, but you have to remit to the master 3/7 of your wages to correspond to the 3 days out of seven that you once worked for him. He also retains the right to recall you into service in emergencies and to increase at any time the fraction of your wages to which he lays claim. Then, in stage six, everyone, all let's say 10,000 slaves, except you, are granted the right to vote. So they get to decide what is allowed and what is not allowed. They get to decide what fraction of your wages will be taken away and what outlets the money will be spent on. In stage seven, you still don't have the right to vote, but you are allowed to try to persuade those who can vote to exercise their powers in a particular way. In stage eight, you are granted the right to vote, but only to break a tie. You write down your vote, and if a tie should occur, your vote is opened up and recorded. No tie has ever occurred. Finally, in stage nine, you are fully granted the right to vote. But this simply means, functionally, that as in stage eight, in case of a tie, your vote carries the issue. But there has never been a tie. Nozick's question is this. At what stage between 1 and 9 did this become something other than the tale of a slave? That's the kind of mind-blowing question that makes you rethink everything you've been taught about taxation and society, government. It's the kind of thing that makes you skeptical of government propaganda from that moment on. And that's precisely why Nozick's question is never asked.
Thank you.
I love stuff like that. That is an amazing song to me. That's it's called Awakening from Everlasting Dream, and I found that a while back and got permission to use it. And man, I just love that song. I love everything about that song. Anyways, hello again. My name is Ira, and you are listening to Open Eyes. Thank you for sticking around with me through that break. And I want to give a quick thank you to my radio listeners, my radio affiliates that are out there, K98 Talk. I love you guys for airing my show on your network. I think it's great. And of course, Late Night in the Midlands. Love you guys over there. And I'm so honored to become a part of both of these communities and both of these networks. And I'm just grateful for it. And of course, I thank you, my listeners, for sticking around through everything that I've gone through over the months that I've been airing this show. I'm glad that you guys have stuck around through the changes that I've made with it all and giving me the good feedback that you guys have been giving me. I really appreciate it. And if you have anything that you want to tell me relating to the show, or if you're interested in me interviewing you for the show, you have a story to tell of any kind, man, send me your information. I would love to hear from you. You can send it to feedback@openeyesnetwork.com. That's feedback@openeyesnetwork.com. I would really love to hear from you guys on anything that you have to say. So let's go on with the topic for this this evening, as far as Bigfoot and anything really kind of relating to cryptozoology. The idea with cryptozoology is it's trying to put forward the idea that these things are real and that they need to be researched and investigated. But people always put them into the paranormal realm of things, into a category that immediately kind of equates them with pseudoscience and hoaxing in the minds of the average person. That really is a large disservice because, you know, like I said, there have been many things that have been found that are proven to exist. And yet years ago, when people tried to say that they were real, they were completely rejected out of hand by the mainstream scientists and by the average person. Heck, science in general works that way, doesn't it? Arthur Schopenhauer said, "All truth passes through three stages. First, it is ridiculed. Second, it is violently opposed. And third, it is accepting as being self-evident." And that is sort of the way that science in general thinks about everything that it does. It's been that way all along. Man can't fly. It's impossible. If he were meant to fly, God would have given him wings. And yet 66 years after the first flight by the Wright brothers, we went to the moon. Science is funny that way, you know? I look at the Sasquatch thing in the same light. Just because we don't know much about it now doesn't mean that we won't, and it doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. In fact, there's more evidence that Bigfoot exists to the naked eye than that bacteria exists, again, to the naked eye. It's about opening the mind and opening the eyes to the idea that what we're told by the mainstream is not always correct, and in fact can often be the absolute opposite of the truth. So at this point, I wanted to really go into the idea of reptilians. I kind of tie the two things together because a lot of people say that Bigfoot is related to the UFO phenomenon or the alien phenomenon, that there is something tying the two together. I don't discount that. That is a possibility. Again, in the realms of everything, I don't discount different possibilities. But so a lot of people do equate them together with UFOs and the extraterrestrial type of phenomenon. and reptilians get thrown into that same boat as well a lot of times. So again, there is a lot of evidence that supports the idea of a race of beings that are more akin to reptiles than humans. And the claim with reptilians is that they're able to maybe shift their forms into a human one, or that they're a race of aliens that has been here like throughout all of human history and are sort of behind the control system that is currently in place. I actually had an encounter with one, in fact. At least I believe, looking back on it, that it was an encounter with one of these reptilian type of beings. I was working at a gas station, and one night while I was standing at the cash register waiting for the next customer to come up, a younger man, I would say he looked about 20 or so years old, came up to the counter, and he put a pack of gum on the counter that he wanted to buy. And as I started to ring him up, I looked over at him, and I was watching right into his eyeballs. And as I looked, he had blue eyes. He was a white guy. He had blue eyes with blonde hair and very kind of stern gaze. And he blinked. And as soon as he blinked and reopened his eyes changed to this weird yellowish color. And it looked slitted like a cat's eye does. So going up and down instead of a pupil. And it looked exactly like that. And then he sat there staring at me for a matter of seconds with that set of eyes. And then he blinked again, and they went back to the blue eyes. So I kind of tossed the change down, and he turned around and he walked away. And it, a couple of other things occurred in there as well. But I just wanted to get out there that, yes, I have seen something along these lines. And so I understand where people are coming from as far as the idea of the shape-shifting sort of reptilian is concerned. It's most definitely been encountered in my life. Now, let me say this. I have seen a lot of videos that are out there of the so-called reptilian shape-shifting people on the screen on like live television. I've seen news reporters, politicians, they've all been seen to have this type of thing going on, especially with the eyes. The thing is that, yes, it does look like something is going on with those videos, like something unnatural is happening with the eyes. But in all of the videos that I've seen that show this kind of thing, there is also a lot of other factors that are going on that goes into this. Frame rates, movements, artifacting on the media sources, all of these things can contribute to that kind of an effect happening. As well, the idea that a program like Adobe After Effects is as easy as a torrent download away is also needing to be considered with this. It's important to know that with all the other fake videos out there as well, that is a possibility. So you can do some pretty amazing things with After Effects. I have a lot of experience with it myself, and you can do some very amazing things, including exactly what you see on those videos of the eyes that shapeshift. It's not at all hard to do. Videos like that, in other words, are far too easy to fake for me to be able to say that, yes, that is evidence of shape-shifting reptilians. It's just that simple. I cannot rely on a video like that to say, yes, they are real, and so on and so forth. It's just that simple. I mean, what I do look at, though, is that there are a lot of historical accounts of this type of thing or this type of being existing. And that's what I look at more than these type of videos. Several ancient people all over the world have described different kinds of reptilian beings. And what is common in a lot of these is that these reptilian type of things, and they're not always humanoid, are often but not always sort of having an animosity with humans. Another common thread are the myths or the ideas of the serpents of wisdom or that sort of thing, who like gave humanity enlightenment sometime back in our prehistory. And I do find that to actually be one of the oddest points with the whole reptilian thing. So many of our legends and our myths surround the idea of reptilians being the ones that saved us from ignorance and that we're able to function now as modern humans because of them. You think about it this way, one of the Mayan gods was described as a serpent of wisdom who enlightened humanity, and the Quetzalcoatl, who was the Aztec version, is basically the same thing, the serpent of wisdom, this winged flying snake. The Hopi, basically, they call these type of beings snake brothers or Sheti, who are actually underground. And a lot of other Native American tribes also talk a lot about this type of reptilian being or reptilian race as well. I also find it really interesting as far as the passing on of wisdom aspect to it all, that when people take things like ayahuasca, the thing that happens to them most often when they've ingested it is that during their hallucinations or their visions, they will meet a being that is a snake being. They refer to her as Snake Woman, who actually gives the person a lot of wisdom and a drive to become more socially and ecologically conscious, to keep the world safe, basically. And yet at the same time, a lot of other legends claim a darker side to them, and they say that they are out to get us all and that they're here to destroy us and make us like their slave race, basically. And of course, this leads into the idea of the Anunnaki. Now, I've read all of Zachariah Sitchin's books over the years, and I've studied the things that he put forward in his different writings and his talks. I still actually have a few of his books on my bookshelf over here, actually. So was he right? He claims to have translated different Sumerian tablets that referred to an alien race which created humans to work as slaves in their mines in Africa. This race, called the Anunnaki, basically, Sitchin said that the black-headed people of Sumeria were created by these beings by mixing man and beast together. And according to Sitchin, the black-headed people were considered slaves in the Sumerian caste system like underneath the Anunnaki. The tablets from Sumeria also refer to the creation of black-headed people in the area geographically called Abzu, which is basically West Africa, essentially. Now, what I find interesting about this idea of this is that, well, it's that thing that I said earlier, where scientists have found that those who are of direct African descent are not tainted by the DNA of Neanderthals. So the Anunnaki allegedly created us as a slave race to work for them. We eventually broke free of that control system, and we've been on the path that we've been on ever since. Or they're still in control today, just by different means and not out in the open as they once were. I mean, either one could be true at this point, yeah? What I do find fascinating is the idea of the serpent symbology within our history, which is still used so much today. The serpent associated with wisdom as a doorway or gateway into another dimension of thinking, like a gatekeeper, so to speak. How can we say on one hand that they were our slave masters, ruling us with an iron fist, and which we had to break free from, and on the other side of our hand, basically say that the reptilian aspect is what gave us wisdom and led us out of the animal state of being? Maybe, and this is something that I've never actually heard people talk about, but it's something that I have considered as a possibility. Maybe things are actually a bit different. Maybe there are two different kinds of reptilian interventions that are going on. On the one hand, you have the physical embodiments of the reptilians. These would be the Anunnaki, or the ones that are sitting in power now, the ones that are controlling things from behind the scenes. These would be the ones that are the cannibalistic, evil, and bent on dominating humanity. On the other hand, you have a spiritual version of them, or maybe even an interdimensional type of a race. These would be the wisdom keepers, or the ones to pass knowledge down to us in order to help us make our way up the food chain, so to speak. It really would go far to me to explaining the strange dichotomy between the two. Maybe they connect with us on that deep lizard level of our brains. Maybe they're trying to tell us that the physical ones are the ones to watch out for and to avoid at all costs. Maybe they're the ones that the Asian culture is connected to a lot more easily. You know, their legends of dragons as beings of great wisdom are really fascinating to me. And maybe there's really nothing at all to any of these things, but in my mind, there really is. And the reason why is because so much evidence over so many years of time tells me that there's more to it than what we're being told or taught, and that it really does warrant an open-minded viewpoint towards it. And that, in the end, is maybe the secret, quote-unquote, serpent wisdom, that anything is possible and that nothing should be discounted. When you do, you ignore the predator that's behind your back waiting to pounce on you. And with that, folks, I am unfortunately, at this point, out of time. So, what did you think about all of this? What did you think about what I had to present you guys here? I hope that you guys got a lot out of it and maybe are coming away with it with thoughts that you maybe have never thought before. I would find that really nice. So, you can give me an email at feedback@openeyesnetwork.com. Let me know what you think. If you want to go to the show notes for this show, you can go to openeyesnetwork.com/OE073. on that page I'll have the links to everything that I read in the news and so on and so forth there. I really recommend going to it. I have all of my archives of all of my shows available there to listen to as well. So if you've missed any of my shows, be sure to go there and listen to them. There's always something interesting. Be sure to stay tuned. We're going to bring you the last frequency here in just a few minutes. And on Friday, on the 20th, I am going to bring you the idea of the culture of love. The culture of love. It should be a very interesting time. Guys, until next time, keep safe out there and have fun. And thank you so much for listening. Remember, tune in Friday, latenightinthemidlands.com, 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time.